Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You probably wouldn't ever want to, I don't know, to fall in love with a boy like me, would you?
No, Dominic, I don't think so, love.
Oh, yeah, no, I was thinking no. Not even in the future, like when I'm your age. Yeah, no. I didn't think so.
Hi there. Welcome to the No Film School podcast. This is Gigi Hawkins, and today we speak with Mikkel E.G. Nielsen. Mikkel is an award-winning editor from Denmark whose work spans the worlds of feature films, TV, short film, commercial, and music video. Notably, he received a Critics' Choice Award, a BAFTA Award, and an Academy Award in editing for his work on Darius Marder's critically acclaimed drama, Sound of Metal. Other feature credits include Beasts of No Nation and, more recently, The Banshees of Inisherin, written and directed by Martin McDonagh. Mikkel is nominated for an Oscar again for editing this film. And so on today's podcast, we will be discussing how Mikkel approaches balancing comedy and drama within Banshee's outstanding script and cast, and why Mikkel is a yes film school man, or all for protecting time to play and experiment and learn and stay curious. We'll unpack his journey from editing the music videos for the band Aqua to his Oscar win to a second Oscar nomination. So let's do this. Welcome, Mikkel, to the No Film School podcast. We're so excited to have you on.
Well, thank you for having me. Can I start with a question?
Please.
Why is it called No Film School?
Great question. As I understand it, Ryan Koo, our founder, didn't go to film school, or he went to film school, but he wasn't sort of learning the on-the-ground techniques. And so he started the website by creating a handbook for cinematographers. And from that, it became just this resource and plethora of information for people who went to film school, for people who, like me, dropped out of film school, and people who never had a chance to go to film school. So it's sort of like, let's give access to everyone. Did you go to film school?
I did. Yeah. And this is like a film school. I mean, film is a film school. So I was just curious why it's called No Film School, but it's something you remember for sure.
It's catchy. Yeah. Well, that actually is a perfect segue into where I'd love to start, which is with your background. Now, mm-hmm. I am familiar with your work. You've made me cry a bunch. Films like The Sound of Metal and Beasts of No Nation. You've also made me laugh and cry a little bit, Banshees of Inisherin. But also, you touched me in my childhood with your very, very beginnings editing the music videos for Aqua. So, which I'm not even kidding you. It was one of four CDs that I had. So when I saw that the other day doing research, I was like, oh my gosh, we're going there. So I'd love to hear, how did you get your start? And what was it like starting out in music and transitioning into narrative?
I mean, coming from a small country, you basically need to do everything, right? Because you can't just live from doing one thing, or at least not when you start out. And you should try and get as much material through your body or through your hands as possible, just to try and explore and try and work with it in so many different ways, and how you can tell stories and how you can treat characters and how you can make things, there's a rhythm in everything, and find the rhythm in everything, and maybe find the offbeat in an edit, and maybe find out why you make a decision and why you edit here and not here, and what does this do compared to this. And so music videos for me was a very easy way to get into playing around with material and to try and tell stories. Also, because with a track, there's a start, a middle, and an end, and you know that that's the thing. So that's an easy start. And then you can just be as playful as possible. And often, especially coming from a country like Denmark, it would be something you did for free, which also allows you to have a little more creative freedom. So you could really experiment. And for me, editing has somehow always been about experimenting and trying to see if there's new ways to do certain things and to treat material in different ways. So, I mean, based on your start, like an Aqua video, the Avid came out, it had a lot of wipes. Why not try and play around with the wipes? So we made Barbie Girl. It has a lot of different wipes. That's a way to learn the tools, but also just a way to try and see how can you tell a story this way or this way. And obviously, no one is going to hire anyone for doing a feature film from the start, which was my dream. But also, I knew that it was impossible unless I went to film school, because in Denmark, you needed that certificate. You needed like that small thing telling you, oh, he went to film school or she went to film school, therefore they can actually edit a feature film. Luckily, that's not the case anymore.
Do you need that to the, like, in current day people as well? Like, definitely need that?
Okay. No. Luckily, that's why, I mean, luckily now you can easily get into the industry, and there's also a lot of directors who doesn't have to go to the film school. But for me, the film school was 4 years of pure fun. And the whole idea of having a place where you can practice and make all the errors and mistakes is so valuable. But it's valuable for everyone. It's valuable for the director, for the VP, for the producer, the sound person, the editor, that we are not supposed to show this to a broader audience.
Yeah.
It's difficult to make all the mistakes and then to try something which is full of mistakes, but then you know that people won't hire you the next time. Right. So for me, that was just like a playground to get into. Yeah, it's a space, because I knew how to edit, but I didn't have the language for it. And I didn't know, I knew how I felt when I saw things, but I couldn't explain myself to you if you were my director. But then getting into a film school for 4 years, and in Denmark it's 4 years and you're only editing. So you're 6 editing students working every day with the same material, same 6 people, and you're watching each other's edits with the same material. Like a scene or a montage or a show, or and it would often be existing footage from existing films. So we would get like the director or an editor to come in and give you the raw material, and then you would work on a sequence or a scene. And I can assure you that's the best. I mean, it's something I really miss every day in the edit room, because it's about why is something working so well in your version? Because you have such a sensibility and you see the material in this way. And I see it differently because maybe I brought something in from my private life that I was angry or I was happy or whatever it is. And it's so much about the eyes that sees,
right?
And how you can treat that. And you're really good with sounds or with this nature sounds or anything, and you suddenly make it into something which is super interesting. And mine is much more naturalistic. And it doesn't have the emotions, or it doesn't have the lyrical qualities or anything. So it's learning that you should train to be able to look at the material in different ways. And I have to be a version of myself where the material will tell me. I have to have this cold perspective almost at them, and then shape the material into how it wants to be told, and also create the sequences.
So it sounds like film school not only created this safe space where you could be experimenting and failing and getting the reps in over the course of 4 years to be able to gain that perspective that you need to, as an editor, to have that, to be able to scrutinize, like, is this scene working? One question that I have, somebody recently brought up in a conversation to me, they said, I think this is ridiculous, but they were like, well, what if a director just learned all the things that an editor could do, then they could do it without an editor? And I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. The editor is like essentially the third tent pole of this process because they bring that fresh perspective often. They're not there on set being attached to shots that cost a lot of money. They are there advocating to the audience. And I was trying to make an additional point of like, and if you get footage and give it to one editor and get footage and the same footage and give it to another editor, you can create a completely different story and narrative and feel. So I'm curious, when you were in those early, the phases of film school, when you were working with other people with the same footage, what were sort of the discoveries that you were making?
Well, the best discovery is that the same material can look in so many different variations. And you can really treat material in a lot of ways, which also then tells me that when I'm working, and I call them challenges always, and I have a certain challenge in a scene, or we have, because it's always a collaboration. But it's about turning every stone in the material, or at least knowing that the decision we are trying to do or tell in the scene is an active choice. It's something we know that it might create an issue for you, but it's something it's an active decision. We are going to tell it this way. So, but I would actually argue against what you just said, because I've seen a lot of really good films which were edited by us as well. And mm-hmm. I think some films can only be done that way. The way I watched Moon Age Daydream, the Bowie documentary, could only be done by Brett Morgan, right, in my opinion. He might have had a lot of help or stuff, but that was his experience and his experiment to do this. And for me, that was an incredible experience in terms, because it was so, I got so many ideas from it, which is a little bit like when I started doing music videos, a way you can treat material in with a certain track and it takes you just on a journey, and then you can change the rhythm or you can change it all. It just became, watching that documentary, it became really exciting again to go back and feel your own material and stuff. And there's a lot of really good who can edit their own movies. But of course, we are a certain, it's almost like rewriting the script again, but then suddenly with all the elements of filmmaking. And then we kind of paint it together with the directors, right? And we find that balance, and sometimes you even start protecting certain things from either producers or directors.
That actually brings me to a question that I have specifically about the Banshees of Inisherin. So I heard in a previous interview that Martin McDonagh let you have the first pass. He was like, Mikkel, you create this narrative and let's go from there. So that leads me to a question from an editor that I frequently work with. Her name's Christina O'Sullivan. And she was wondering what surprised you or what changed for you when you received the footage versus reading the script? And what were the main things that changed from your first cut to picture lock?
Everything. So the idea of sitting alone and doing that first pass is kind of a way to get into the material and to understand the material, but also just to get organized. And the more organized I am, the better a version I can be in the room together with on Banshees Martin or any director, because I work the same way always. I really like sitting alone with the material and do a first pass on everything, because then I have the material organized in a way so I can easily play around with it when they come into the room. But it's also just a way to feel how the characters work, the DP works with the camera, how the director talks to the actors, how the sets are, how they block a scene. little by little you learn things. And I actually don't edit for at least 2 or 3 weeks. I only select and look through the material, and then suddenly it reveals itself how at least it wants to be put together in the first pass, mm-hmm. which is probably often very classic the way I do it. And then more and more, the more scenes and the more material you've been through your life, you get a better and faster way of trying to put a dialogue scene together, for example, mm-hmm. And find a rhythm in dialogue, because that's, and especially dialogue with Martin's script, because that's almost like a piece of music and has so many beats and has so much rhythm into it. So that was really playful to play around with. But mm-hmm. I also know what kind of director he is. So obviously on a first pass, you never touch anything from the script. You always show the intention of what was written down and what they shot. And then when I get in and I can show it, I can also play around with sounds or music. And he actually, on this project, he sent me some tracks that he felt this was a track that I wanted to try for the opening.
Yeah.
In this way and these things. And of course, you have to honor these things and you have to show it's a collaboration. I'm not someone who should treat material in a completely different way. And to be honest, that's my whole approach in the edit process. Mm-hmm. My approach is to try and stay as objective and open until as late as possible in the whole process.
Is that just your mindset? Are you just a very evolved, emotionally intelligent person who can put things into perspective? Or do you find like ego creeping in where you have to be like, oh, let me let go of this?
I definitely don't have an ego. I think I absolutely love that it's a collaboration. And I even don't have problems with other people coming in trying things. I like on Sound of Metal, Darius, the director, used to be an editor. He wanted to play around. And I see that that's for me like a gift.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that his eyes might see something that I never saw. And what if he came back with a sequence, which is absolutely amazing? I mean, I can learn from it and the film can benefit from it. And it's all about a learning process.
Yeah.
In my opinion. That's the selfish way, right? We have to learn every day and we have to learn something and especially fill that toolbox that we're carrying around with the...
Which honestly, I think to let go of that and to find that collaboration and be able to problem solve and puzzle solve together, or, hey, let me drive for on this edit and let me see if I can feel this out and then bring it back to you. Like that off honors the story that you're telling. And I think that like it be to keep that in mind, which is something to bring it back to sort of the film school, the negative of film school, when you don't have a safe place that's protected and allows you to play. And this goes to also emerging filmmakers, if you're just getting started, but you're putting all of your eggs in this one basket and not letting yourself fail forward or try something or experiment with something, it's easy to hang on to something that you think it is. But really, sometimes it's the letting it go and letting it breathe and letting it take the time to unfold, especially if you're working through a story problem that's not working. So.
But at least explore with the material what is actually possible. And there's so many things that are possible with so little material. And you can color it in so many different ways with sound and music and how to start a scene and how to end a scene, the balance within the scene, the status within the characters, the whole idea of only going on character, all stories are characters. You have to have your character. Otherwise, it just becomes surface and it's nothing, which is fine for sometimes for a music video or for a commercial or something. But if you really want to feel anything, you need your characters. You need to invest and protect and love and treat your characters as in fiction like human beings. And in documentary, you also have to protect them so you're telling their version of what they're actually trying to say, because it's so easy for us to manipulate with what we're actually working with. And it's so easy to make someone say something that they didn't necessarily mean, but it's for the better for the whole sake of the film, which is sometimes a problem, I see. But then, which is why I really like working in fiction, because it's okay to treat a character. It's okay to change a mood. It's okay to change something that was intended to be a happy scene, suddenly it becomes sad because you put it up, or you change the order, or you play with structure. And I love doing that. And by me not having an opinion until as late as possible doesn't necessarily mean that I don't know or don't have ideas of what we could do. Mm-hmm. But I really want to honor also the collaboration with the director or the producer, or whoever it is, to try, at least try all the things with them and for them. And then at certain points, you start saying, well, what would happen if we just took that word out? What would happen if we ended the scene on him or her? Mm-hmm. What change? How? This would be fun. What if we change the balance of the status within the scene? Here he comes in here. So it becomes like a battle. And on Banshees, there was tons of these because it's such a well-written script with amazing performances. So it's more about trying to balance all of them and say, well, you have a main character, but you also have all the other characters and you want all of them to shine. So it's about finding that rhythm and the balance of a film.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
The balance and rhythm of the characters in Banshees is... So I studied theater in Ireland, and I was like, man, this is an Irish story. And it's so driven by characters confined by space. And I'm hearing that you're collaborating with the directors, or with the director, but also you're collaborating with the characters in these moments and like honoring their space within this scene, which like it does feel like a rhythmic thing in this. And it feels like it comes full circle, especially given how the performances unfold in such effective ways from a directing standpoint and from the writing standpoint. I am curious to hear an example specifically from The Banshees of Inisherin about cracking a scene or making a scene work that wasn't working, that felt off balance, and how you worked through that and what the end result was.
I wouldn't say we never had a thing that didn't work, but it's more about finding the balance. Martin is very generous and has a very rich material. So he also have options for some of the scenes. And there was like a key thing for this film would be that you, for me at least, and it's not necessarily something that we discussed in the edit room, but it's more of a feeling. And it's more to try and find these dogmas, the rules for yourself, and then to try and play with that as a whole. Almost like, first of all, you try and find a circle. And for Banshees, it would be, what if this is almost like a fable of something, a story told for you at bedtime by your parents, almost like and once upon a time. So you go in through the sky and you find this place, but you also exit it. That's a circle for me. And already there, I'm really like, okay, now we just have to fill in whatever is in the middle because this makes complete sense to me. On Sound of Metal, we did the exact same thing. We found the circle of Ruben sitting on his drums and sitting on a bench. The exact same image, but two completely different. One he's eager to start and the other one he's in complete silence and has accepted a lot of things. So it's about trying to search for these things. And that often comes in from... That's what you do on documentaries, and you can keep on searching and searching and searching. And sometimes you never find it because you never found that start and you never found that ending.
Right.
And then you find the balance in between. In Banshees, there was a key, which is what if Siobhan is the heart of the film? Therefore, you can start playing with the comedy and drama up to the point where Siobhan leaves, and then it becomes a tragic.
Yeah.
A tragedy. And then maybe you treat the scenes with less of the humor and more of the real characters that you already develop. And it's also about allowing you, which is, I've never tried to work with comedy and drama before. I was very intrigued, but I also didn't know if I could actually do it, which is why I was very aware of Martin's work, and I really liked the script when I read it. But I was also like, okay, I can really learn something from this experience, mm-hmm. how to balance these things. But I can also, I know of myself that if I'm engaged, I can also bring something. And these things are little by little finding that balance into it.
Yeah.
So a learning process would be then when Siobhan leaves, it's not that funny. You don't have these small elements because it becomes much more tragic.
Yeah.
And we also start coloring the character into something that he really didn't want to be. Like with anger and the sadness. It's a very, very sad film in that sense, but it's also very beautiful. And then Martin's scripts often have the possibility to play with these things. But little by little, we peeled these onion of scenes, and then you find the truthness in it, and you find that balance of suddenly Dominic, where it just stands alone when he's saying, well, there goes that dream together with Siobhan up to that point.
Oh, my heart.
Yeah, and you do that because that's the travel of a character. That's where mm-hmm. you start to, if you can hit that moment, and what if we could hit that moment with all the different characters? When Siobhan is on the boat, you see her waving at her brother. It's almost the same feeling, and the same goes for the ending when you have these two characters. How much has to be said, and how much? We had the possibilities of talking and saying much more in it, but it was like a learning process of less is more often.
And it's so powerful when it's not said. Upon rewatching the film, I misremembered the scene where Dominic and Siobhan are talking, and he says, well, there goes that dream. Mm-hmm. It felt so much longer in my memory because I was like, and then he's just rambling and coming up, and then watching, I was like, it's so clear and it's so specific and every line is building and it is so full. And I think that's why I remembered it as so full, but I was like, but it's just so poignant. It's so powerful. Oh, I love that scene.
And that is really what Martin is really, really good at, because he's really, really good at creating the characters and make them believable. And then also the structure up to that point, because we didn't really play with structure in this film, and we didn't take out a lot. We took out some, but that's more side things where you can color a character, or if you need a little more backstory of the characters. But these, I mean, that's often something you need in a film, but these were much more clear, or the way you meet them and the way you treat them. So it was really less is more often with this material.
When revisiting The Sound of Metal, through the lens of thinking of the edit, I thought, if I were Martin McDonagh, thinking of who would I bring onto this, watching Sound of Metal and watching someone edit together a story that so successfully drives characters in scenes where one person is not hearing the other person, very different movies. But I can see how the translation would totally make sense to me as a director. So I'm curious, how did you go about getting the job working on The Banshees of Inisherin? How did you start the relationship with Martin McDonagh, and what was building that collaboration like in the beginning?
So it started on a sad note, because Martin has been working for a long time and was supposed to work with John Gregory, mm-hmm. who passed away, I believe, shortly before they started shooting. So obviously I was not supposed to edit this film at all, but I was invited in when that happened. And that's obviously a very delicate situation, but I also actually, I knew of Martin's work, obviously, but, and I read the script and I really liked it, but my whole backstory is also that I actually studied a lot of John Gregory's work when I was in film school and before film school, because he had a very, very fine sensibility to how he treated characters. And I remember being much younger, and before I started film school, I was at a place called European Film College, which is in Denmark, and that's an 8-month course that anyone can attend. Half of the students are Danish, half of them are from the rest of the world. And you live there and you study anything related to film. So that can be like script writing or sound or music or editing or DP or directing or acting or whatever it is. It's more to try and find and see maybe this is something for me. And I just remember watching Naked at that time. And suddenly I saw something new, mm-hmm. how that character was. And obviously it's a lot to do with the director and the actor and stuff like that. But I was interested in how it was put together and how it was treated with the utmost respect with this character. And it was, for me, I felt I watched the documentary and I was really intrigued by that. So at film school, we did the same, and you have, and for 4 years, you have a lot of time to watch a lot of stuff and show each other, the students show each other scenes and films. And I was very aware of John's work, and so I felt honored to be invited in, but I also wanted to honor him mm-hmm. in a certain way. At least I really didn't want it to be that it was in the edit that everything fucked up. I really had that with me all the way through.
It's a heavy thing to carry.
Well, it wasn't in the sense of being heavy. It was more about just being aware that bringing this into it, and it actually became a very beautiful collaboration. I really enjoyed it with Martin. He was very generous, but also my assistant Nicola, who used to work with John and who lost a friend. So this whole process, a friend and a mentor, of course, we worked together. So I really cherish it, and it was a special project to do.
And the film's dedicated to him, so it's such a
yes, which is a beautiful gesture from Martin.
Yeah. Now, I do want to shift into speaking a little bit more about The Sound of Metal, which you won the Academy Award for, which you unfortunately were not able to be there in person because we were hit with a
pandemic. I was there in person.
In the train station, right?
Yes.
Traditional. No. So what is it like now going through this sort of post-pandemic time? Being nominated again?
I don't know, because it's, for me, it's not really real in a sense that it's something and I don't know why that is, but there's something that I'm very, very honored, obviously. I'm really glad and I'm very happy about it and honored that someone sees that work that I put into it, and it's by editors that mm-hmm. look at your work and my work, which is, I'm very happy because the whole idea for this film and even for Sound of Metal has never been to try and make people aware of the editing at all. It's almost the opposite. And I actually think that's one of our biggest goals as editor, is to try and serve the story and to the characters. And then I could probably, I mean, I did that on music. I have done tons of music videos where it's much more showy and these things. But where I am in life right now, and where the journey where that has taken me with the films that I've been working on has been a little bit more of trying to step back and try and find characters, work with the amazing actors, a script. Directors that can really inspire me and that I can learn from. That has been the goal, but getting the recognition obviously is something I've never dreamt about, thought was possible. And that partly has to do with coming from a small country, probably, because it wasn't really reality. But that said, I was super surprised and happy to win the award, of course, and especially doing it together with the sound team who also won the award, because it was a very special collaboration we had, and it was a really beautiful way to end. Very, very interesting and beautiful collaboration.
That brings us to another listener question, specifically about The Sound of Metal. And this is from Christian Moldez, who is an editor and a screenwriter and a director and an actor who's very talented. And he wanted to know, when you were working on that film, how much was the sound mix in consideration for cutting? And as an editor, what in the early stages of cutting was involved, essentially? What was that collaboration across the sound team?
So there's two stages to that. One is that I was intrigued that you started working with sound as a storytelling tool, meaning that you can hold back information. And the whole idea of internal, external. Obviously, we did and they did tests, and I knew how much they put into those tests, but really, that was not so important for me in the editorial process, because it's easy to feel and see if something works or doesn't work just by cutting off the sound or putting like a test tone a little high so it almost sounds like a tinnitus sound. These things. It was more about finding the balance and if you can, and the simplicity, because that's all to do. We have a tendency in editing, especially, to make things complicated. But it's the simpler you can create things, the more real and powerful it feels. Mm-hmm. And it's about trying to find that simplicity for Banshees within the complex, because it's a very complex story, but it's also a very simple premise. And therefore, you can add and add and add on to it. But that's also why you can maybe invest a little bit of yourself, because you actually go with a very happy guy up to a point where he suddenly is just baffled that, why is this guy not coming out to me? And you see the exact same thing. You ask the exact same question as your main character asks. Therefore, you invest a little bit with your main character, which is a really interesting start script-wise and a really good, great thing from Martin. But then in Sound of Metal, it's the same. But that's where we then, Harris had these ideas of his approach, or his idea was, well, what if we as hearing people are seeing a film as a minority? And a minority see everything as a whole. That was such a beautiful thing. And I was like, absolutely, let's go. And he had spent so many years on this whole project. But then trying to use images and sound almost like a visual language, create a new language and like awaken all your senses, hearing, seeing, and then play with that. See something, see it again, it's different. You react to it. You create a language with, you know, you have often they shoot or block a scene in wides and mediums and close-ups. What if the close-ups are the internal and what if the wides are the external? Then you play around with it and then you find out, actually that worked. But what first you would play around with, what if the medium is the internal? No, that doesn't work. Okay, what if it's the close-up then? That's even better. But then when you cut to the medium, how does that work then? That's not as interesting as going from a very wide to very close-up, and that's where you have these changes. So little by little, you try. It's just a game. It's basically just have a lot of yellow and red and blue Lego stuff, and then you start building a house, and then you're like, that's a nice house. Let's try it again. And then you play it around with this one. Then you say, okay, this works for a scene like this because there's only one person who talks to the other one. What if this is a 7-minute long dialogue scene and our main character is listening to two people having a dialogue where he can't hear anything, but we go in and out of that dialogue scene? How does that work? And then you find out that's actually really, really difficult because how much should he know? We don't want, suddenly you find out little by little that, hey, what about if we as the audience know exactly as much as our main character? Meaning we never know more than he does. Meaning, if that works, then you probably invest a little bit more in your main character, because you're never ahead of him. You're always with your main character, and right. You're probably even as frustrated about the whole situation as he might be. But that's a learning process over and over and over again, because then you've done a pass on a film which is like this. And then you watch it, and then you say, that's an interesting film. Let's watch it again without sound. And then you watch it again without sound, and then you're like, actually, I understand a lot. So maybe I don't need to tell that much. So this information you don't need, but this we definitely need, because otherwise we don't understand who that is or who. And then little by little, it's a learning process of how to understand a story and how much we need to understand as an audience.
Yeah. The way you talk about story and the questions you ask about character and story, you sound like a writer. I mean, I have to ask, do you ever write outside of writing a story by editing it together?
Well, I do, but it's just not in writing with hands. It's more writing with the stories in the edit room. And it's playful. And that is what we do. It's interesting to meet and work with people who you often have it also with a DP. You have sometimes you feel and sense a DP has a language, and it's a storyteller. He's telling stories with his images. That's the exact same thing. You don't have to write those scenes to have that feeling. They don't have to say all the words to have that feeling. Then you have So little by little, a director often find these people who can translate what it is. And then you find out that maybe we don't need that word, or maybe we challenge that word. Just that one word can change the whole scene, because it's a no, and that changes the whole scene. But what if we took it out? Because then it's not a no. Then it's certainly an open scene. And that's where our finest as editors is to try and be as open as possible for as long as possible, and then to also challenge the things, even though you know that it, as long as you know that you've turned every stone in with this material, at least you've tried it, therefore you know that this can be treated in this direction, this direction, this direction, this direction. And then it's about finding that balance of what is right or wrong.
Right.
With, of course, with the director. It's always the director's film. This never becomes my baby. The film is not my baby. I'm helping someone, and I always see it like that. I know that some editors almost become protected because now you can't touch it. But oh, of course you can touch it. It's not my film. I'm helping someone to try and make the best possible version of their intention.
You're a story doula.
Yeah,
you're
but helping. that's also what the actors do, right? Because they're adding. And then sometimes they're adding something that a director didn't even know what's possible.
Yeah.
And then suddenly it becomes
onion metaphor. Yeah. Because it does, it's like it is true, layer upon layer upon layer, peeling back, adding it back on. And that requires exactly what you're saying, the openness and the curiosity and the flexibility and the willingness to explore and play. Now, this is our last question for today. And this is about emerging filmmakers, people who are just getting their feet wet. What advice do you have for somebody who wants to work in this space and tell the stories that you tell?
I mean, the issue is that there's so many possibilities right now, and everyone has a laptop, and you can easily get access to a lot of material, and you can take it down. So it's just about starting and trying things. And I can give you one example. I went from non-linear to linear to when the computer came. So just to learn the program, I had this pendulum. 6 seconds of a black background with a pendulum flying around. And then I was like, that's interesting. Okay, there were 6 seconds. How can I edit a whole music video with this pendulum? And then I found a music track which had a lot of different elements in the music. And I believe it was a track from a band in the 90s called Deep Forest or something. It just had a lot of different elements in the music. But that was actually my goal, because then I took this pendulum and then I said, okay, what if this frame where the pendulum is up here in the frame, upper right or left corner, what if that's the snare drum? What if this one, this frame in here is the hi-hat? And what if this is the bass? And what if this? And what if I edit all the frames to so it always follows the bass when it's here? And what if the other one? Then suddenly you find out with the edits how powerful that is with music, because then you first you find out, oh, that's amazing. That's so many edits I can do, and it looks amazing because now it just follows the whole track and I can hear everything. But then you get a little bit like bold, and then you're like, oh, what if I now take away the snare drum suddenly? And then you see it and you miss it, but you stop listening to it because now you only hear all the other elements in the music. And it's basically the whole idea of editing. It's the same thing we do with characters. What if I take away this information? What happens now? Then you engage your audience. It's almost like you're playing with the music, but visually, your eye is depending on, or the music, suddenly you hear a thing that you didn't really hear in the track. Suddenly you only hear that thing because it's also a visual thing that comes up with you.
Yeah.
And that's the best way to train yourself, because you find out how much rhythm there is in things, and you also play around with the visuals, and then little by little you find maybe even material where there's dialogue, and then you look at, look at this, here they're looking at him and he's talking, and now it always cuts when they're talking. Okay, that's interesting, but it's also a little bit boring always to be on the one who talks. What happens if we just stay on this guy and then now he listens to the other one talking? And then you're like, that's interesting, because both I hear what he's saying, but I also see the reaction to what he's doing and how he takes that in. And that's then suddenly you find out what dialogue can be or how you can play with the dialogue in the scene. And then you maybe even just like find a lot of skateboard videos on YouTube, and then you put that together to another track and you say, what if we take all these on the ramp and they fly around in this section where it's the chorus, but then let's have them on the street in the opening, and then we have them something. Then you start playing around with story and storytelling in it. And I think that's how most of us start and play around with it. And you probably did the same.
I've definitely had my fair share of playing around, and that has saved projects. You know, it is so important.
These are just for yourself, and it's okay to make mistakes. It's actually about making mistakes, because most of the times it's within the mistakes that you find the keys to something which is suddenly opening up to a whole new world. And you would never do it, which is also why new filmmakers have to open up the material and don't be so locked. Even though you shot it like this, a new director would often like, no, it has to be this because I've worked on the script for so long and it has to be this way. And it's like, say, okay, it is this way now. Why don't we put that aside and we play around with it? What would happen if the scene came after the other one? Well, that's not good. No. But what would happen if we then shuffle all of them around? That's a bad story. Yes. But what would happen then if we only took this one up in there? And then suddenly you find out that there's so many possibilities in the material. And there's just one thing which suddenly is like, whoa, that was interesting. And then you're like, yes. So what if we go back to the original way you had the script, but we actually do this small thing? And then you're like, that's really interesting. It became much more interesting. That really, suddenly I see something which I didn't know how to express, or I didn't know how to, I felt there was something missing, but now it feels as a whole. And then you're like, yeah, but it's only because you made all the, you walked down the other small road. Yeah, because you were playing around with it and you are open to seeing what happens if we do these things, because it's not so dangerous. You can always go back, especially now, you can go back to the things, and at least also trust in the people you work with, that they might even also have opinions and stuff. We're not just a pair of hands, right? Doing editing or doing sound. You might actually also have an idea or an opinion. And sometimes amazing things comes out of these things. And the best collaborators, of course, they allow you to do what you're good at and bring something to the table. And if I feel that someone respects me and is interested in me bringing something, then I'll be like, I might actually come to work an hour before because I have this idea that I want to play around with. Invest a little bit more of yourself. The beauty about when I got Oscar nominated the first time, they invited me into these. I was invited into ACE, for example, which has been a long time dream for me, coming from Denmark, because I've seen all these American films with this ACE after. So that was like a dream. Maybe I can one day, if I'm lucky or good enough, I can put that after my. But what's beautiful is that you can then talk to some fellow editors, and a lot of them are still active, and they're also older than me, and some of them even very much like a lot older than me. But what's interesting is that they're all curious. They're all really curious about, how did they do this, Mikkel? How did you find out about playing around with, on for example, Sound of Metal, like internal, external sound? How did you find the language about that? And if you stay positive, open, and curious, then you're just so far ahead. And that's what we have to be in that edit room. And honestly, if a director to me comes in and say, like, that was the most shitty shoot I've ever had and nothing worked, I'll always be like, of course we can make something work out of this, because we can basically do everything with the material. And we can really do a lot with the material, even though it didn't necessarily go the way they wanted to, the intention. But then we can maybe do something which is like 90% or 80%, or maybe sometimes we can even make it 120%, because suddenly we can reveal something they didn't even know existed in the material.
I love that. Well, we're protecting our curiosity and creating space to experiment and fail and try things. And I do hope that you can join us again next time that you're nominated on the next film.
Well, we don't know, because we don't know if that ever going to happen, because I would love to, but I'll try my best, at least.
Thank you.
I can do.
Now we know your motivation is to come back onto the podcast. This has been such a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much, Mikkel. I am so appreciative. And also, I know our listeners will be. Where can people follow your work outside of on your films? Is there anywhere on social media, or do we just have to follow you on IMDb?
I do have social media, I think. I have an Instagram?
Yes, that's the one.
I have Instagram.
Okay, what is your Instagram?
It's very difficult. It's Mikkel EG.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay. Okay.
I don't really use it. Well, I use it looking at stuff, following interesting people.
You can go to Mikkel's Instagram and see who he follows and follow them to follow interesting people, which is actually a great way to use Instagram. Well, thank you so much.